This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, I'm Sharmila Ganesan, and welcome to History on Repeat on The Bigger Picture. This is an 8-part mini-series that aims to delve into key aspects of Malaysian history. And of course, today is the second episode of our series. Today, we will be looking at the Sejarah Melayu and the history of the Malacca Sultanate. And I have with me historian and independent scholar, Professor Ahmad Adam. Thank you for joining me, Prof.
Thank you.
So let's set the stage briefly, right? For our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with the history of the Malacca Sultanate in the 14th century, what are some of the main points we should know about the rise and fall of the Sultanate?
Well, although some people in Malaysia or some historians claim that Malacca was founded in the 14th century, I don't agree. See, the evidence that one finds is contrary to that. Malacca was founded around 1400. And it was established by Parameswara. But of course, when he established his kingdom, it was not a sultanate yet. He was not yet a Muslim. Parameswara, as you know, came from Palembang. Parameswara means the Supreme Lord or the Mighty King. And he left Palembang because of some friction with the Majapahit rulers. His name, Parameswara's name, originally was, or not really name, his nickname, his title, was Marajaburi. He was a prince. Then when his father died, he took over the throne. You asking me just now about the history of Malacca, right? I think the history of Malacca is very shady because of lack of evidence, historical evidence. Many people have tried to make use of the Malay annals or the Sejarah Melayu, but there are so many versions of the Sejarah Melayu, and one does not know which version is the earliest. At present, many people claim that the Raffles manuscript number 18 was the oldest. It was, of course, compiled or rewritten. It was copied in, some people say, in 1612. But this is based on the opinion of Richard Winstead. And many Europeans and even local scholars think that the Raffles manuscript number 18 is the most reliable one. But actually, I had worked on a Malay annals manuscript, which is called the Krusenstern manuscript, now kept at the library in Leningrad in Russia. And I think, based on the language, the style, that the copies, there were three copies used, it was more closer to the original work of the Sejarah Melayu, the manuscript.
Maybe before we get more deeply into that, we can take this back a little bit and have you tell us, what is the importance of the Sejarah Melayu in the history of Malacca and of Malaysia? It's also known as the Sulalatus Salatin. What is its significance?
It's simply because there are no other sources. The Sejarah Melayu is supposedly the first Malay manuscript on the Malays, on a Malay Sultanate ever written in this country. But one doesn't know because one doesn't really know because there could be other manuscripts, but they disappeared. They get lost.
And what is the source of the Sejarah Melayu in terms of who wrote it? When was it written? Why was it written?
The Sejarah Melayu is actually, it's called Sulalatus Salatin. If you translate it into English, it's the genealogy of kings. But there is a subtitle to that. It's called Pituturan Raja-Raja. Pituturan Segala Raja-Raja. And Pituturan is not a Malay word. Mm. It's a Kawi word. It's an old Javanese word. Pituturan means, apart from being having a meaning of genealogy, it also means memory, recollection, to gain consciousness, to regain consciousness, to reflect on, to remember, to keep in mind, to bring into realization. Mm. All that come under pituturan. The root word is tutur. But people have misread this word. So they pronounce it as pertuturan, which means a different thing.
Right.
Pertuturan is conversation.
Mm.
And some people pronounce it as peraturan, which means rules or regulations. So this is the main thing that I try to argue when I edited the Kursensen manuscript, that there are so many Javanese words. When I say Javanese, I mean Kawi or old Javanese words, which people have misread. And of course, the study of the Malay Annals or Sulalatus Salatin was started by the Europeans. And their study influenced the local scholars.
Right.
But to me, the mistakes have been going on for over two centuries.
Mm.
And when I try to correct this, people are not very happy.
I'm quite interested in the idea of the naming of things, right? And we have several names for the Sejarah Melayu. We have most prominently Sejarah Melayu, which means the Malay Annals or Malay History. But we also have Sulalatus Salatin, which means genealogy of kings. You know, how do these two different names, what do they tell us about the way we interpret this manuscript and the different readings that we have of the Malacca Sultanate?
You see, it is not wrong to say it's the genealogy of kings. But the word pituturan also reflects this. One of the meanings is genealogy. But the purpose of writing, it first began as an oral tradition. Because in the olden days, people really told stories, you know. And later on, somebody would collect the stories, compile them, and wrote them. Now, the purpose of writing the Sejarah Melayu was to make the rulers reflect on the past, to learn something about the past. For example, they were not supposed to oppress the people. They were supposed to behave well. So when you read the Sejarah Melayu or the Malay Annals, you might find a lot of sarcasm, innuendos, which many people miss. When there's a fairy tale about a legend about the Putri Gunung Ledang, Princess of Gunung Ledang, Ofe, Princess Ofe, mm-hmm. Ofe Mountain. Actually, the purpose of telling that story was to teach the ruler of Malacca not to be over ambitious. You don't expect to marry somebody, even though it was a fairy character, a fairy tale character, because the demand by that Princess of Gunung Ledang was, you must build me a golden bridge and so many other things. And also, eventually, you must kill your son. I must get the blood of your son.
Yeah.
So this is actually, it's meant to teach the ruler, don't be so over-ambitious.
Mm.
And Sejarah Melayu consists of not only fairy tales or myths, but there's some historical information. But it is never considered, for me, it's never considered as a historical book, which many people do.
Mm.
No? You can use it as a historical source, but it's not a historical book.
Mm.
It's not a genuine historical book. It can be called by the different names, Hikayat Melayu, Sulalatus Salatin, but they all mean that it is a narrative about the Malay rulers of Malacca and how Malacca was developed. For example, according to the Sejarah Melayu, the ruler of Malacca, Parameswara, who first came to Bertam, he was resting under a tree, and then he saw a mouse deer. you know, fighting with a dog. So according to the author, the unknown author of the Sejarah Melayu, the mouse did beat the dog. Now and then he asked his, one of his men, what is the name of this tree? And the man told him, it's called the Malacca tree. Now this is the myth. Mm-hmm. And this myth was actually copied, plagiarized from the older Malay manuscript, which is Hikayat Raja Raja Pasai, which was written in Pasai. Because Pasai also evolved his name from the confrontation between mouse, deer, and dog.
Is that so?
But the only difference is the dog befriended the mouse, deer. It cuddled the mouse, deer. Mm-hmm. And so the dog was named Pasai. It was a dog that belonged to the Raja, to the chief. So he said, it's better to name this place Pasai. So in other words, the story of the founding of Malacca was actually taken from the Hikayat Raja Pasai or the Pasai Chronicles. But based on my study, I think Malacca originally was a Sanskrit word. Malacca means a shady place where you can sit down, a lot of leaves. Mm. It's not a tree. Mm. So that's Malacca. Now, if you, some people say that Malacca was an Arabic word. Of course, in Arabic, you have Malacca. But then the Arabs didn't come to Malacca yet during the time of Parameswara. So it cannot be an Arabic word. Mm. Neither could it be a Persian word. Yeah. This was concocted later. Yeah. Of course, in Persian, Malacca could also mean a meeting place. That's what the Portuguese also mentioned about this. But it's not your original name. The original name must be that Sanskrit word, Malacca.
So we do need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll discuss more about the Sejarah Melayu and why it was written down from an oral tradition. You're listening to History on Repeat, and today I'm speaking with Professor Ahmad Adam, historian and independent scholar, about the Sejarah Melayu and the Malacca Sultanate. We'll be back after a short break on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to History on Repeat, the 8-part mini-series where we discuss key subjects, places and themes in Malaysia's past and why they matter today. So today I'm speaking with Professor Ahmad Adam, historian and independent scholar, about the Sejarah Melayu and the Malacca Sultanate. Now, one of the things that I find interesting about this text, Sejarah Melayu, is its origins in oral storytelling, where history is actually passed down by word of mouth. The earliest version, well, which you're sort of contradicting, was, as far as we know, the Raffles manuscript, which was written down in 1612. I'm just curious as to why was it written down at that point instead of continuing to be passed on?
You see, the supposedly 1612 date. This is just speculation. It was not written down in 1612. Mm-hmm. In my study of the Krusenstein manuscript, first it started as an oral tradition. And then somebody wrote it down because the ruler instructed it to be written down. And this written piece of work, the manuscript, the original manuscript, was passed down from one generation to another. We don't know the dates, but definitely it started in the 15th century under certain rulers, and it continued until the 16th, and 1612 is the 17th century. Mm. It's quite late. Mm. The only thing is, the Raffles manuscript number 18 mentioned the name of a ruler when the Sejarah Melayu was written. And that happened to be around that period, you know, 1612. But actually, based on the Krusenstein manuscript, the ruler didn't complete his writing in Johor. He was exiled to Aceh because Iskandar Muda, the Acehese king, invaded Johor. And it was in Aceh that he completed his text. And that is why in the Krusenstein manuscript, there are so many Acehese words. Mm. apart from many Javanese words and Persian and Arabic words. So definitely this Chrysanthemum manuscript must have been copied from an older copy than the Raffles manuscript.
Right.
And I'm now studying the Raffles number 18, and I find that many Westerners have misread it. Like, for example, the king who married off his daughter to Iskandar. It is mentioned in the Raffles 18 and all other texts that it was Raja Kida Hindi because of the spelling, the Jawi spelling, equivalent to KYD, you know, Kap Yadal.
Right.
It is not Kida. It's Kaid, because Kaid is a Persian word meaning ruler or authority or governor. And that's only one example. There's so many other words.
So on this subject of this Western misreading, which you just mentioned, and you mentioned this earlier as well, the role of colonialism when it came to the Sejarah Melayu, how has the study of the Sejarah Melayu and the Malacca Sultanate been affected or sort of shaped by colonialism, by the European practice of studying Oriental histories?
Well, this is called Orientalism.
Exactly.
Now, in Orientalism, it's a doctrine, you know. Orientalism is a doctrine. The colonial individuals or people of authority wanted to put their print down that they were the master. And they were even master of the knowledge of the local people. Unfortunately, for the local people, especially in Malaysia, they believe whatever the Orientalists said. They never question until recently. And for example, the words S-P-R-B-A, for over two centuries, that word has been pronounced as Sapurba or Sipurba, meaning the ancient. But it is not Sapurba or Sipurba. It's Supraba. S-P-R-B-A or S-P-R-B is Supraba. Supraba means it's another name for the Buddha. So what the author, the unknown, the author of the Sejarah Melayu has always been unknown. So it's not true that he was Tun Sri Lanang. Tun Sri Lanang was a pseudonym. It's nama samaran. So nobody knows his name. So Sang Supraba was written down by the author because the author wanted to show that, he didn't want to show that Buddhism had come to the Malay area. So he separated Buddhism from the name of an individual, Supraba. Just like Sang Nila Utama, that's another name for Supraba. Sang Nila Utama means Vishnu. Nila is blue, the color of Vishnu.
Yeah.
Utama means premier. So also is the name Sri Tribhuwana, the king of the three worlds, is also another name for Supraba. So for two centuries, over two centuries, people have misunderstood this. Because Buddhism came to Sumatra, to Sriwijaya. And that was at Bukit Suguntang. It's a place near Palembang. And it symbolized the Malay area. It was a hill. I've been to that place. It's not very high. Still, it is symbolic. And Supraba then married the daughter of Demang Lebar Daun. That's the Malay name. Demang Lebar Daun, the white leaf, Demang. Demang means chief. And that's how the local culture blended with Indian-based culture. Because Supraba, the Buddha, came from India.
So how much of how we now view the Sejarah Melayu is shaped by these colonialist or Orientalist readings?
Yes, of course, because the local people didn't do anything. Didn't question, and they didn't start the writing. It was wasted. But I salute these Orientalists. If they didn't start anything, then the local people won't know anything. You know? It was John Leyden, for example. He studied the manuscript maybe not the Raffles manuscript, but it was one of the versions of Sejarah Melayu. And he engaged an Indian Malay from Penang, Ibrahim Kandu, to help him translate. And so he was able to publish in around, it was published in 1821, but it was written around 1812. John Leyden, he was one of the early texts actually. And without his work, the local people wouldn't know.
And following that, once we sort of started taking an interest in reading the Sejarah Melayu for ourselves, what has the role of the Sejarah Melayu come to be for the national narrative of Malaysia?
The Sejarah Melayu is still a very important text. It's not, you don't have to consider it as a historical text or history book, but it reflects the culture of that period, the hierarchical system, you know, where the Raja is the ruler, but he was mostly helped by the Paduka Raja. Now, people misunderstand also, until today, Paduka Raja originally was not the Bendahara. Paduka Raja was a special advisor to the ruler. You see, this is Sanskrit word. Paduka means slipper or shoe or foot.
Okay.
In Sanskrit.
Yeah.
And the Raja depended on him. Raja, of course, is king.
Mm-hmm.
And below him was the Bendahara, who was in charge of the money, exchequer.
Mm-hmm.
But slowly, over time, the two posts combined. So, in the Sejarah Melayu, the title became Bendahara Paduka Raja. So, it is important, actually, when one studies the Malay manuscripts, to be able to approach it through the philological method, to study the words. And it's not easy because the spellings, the Jawi spellings, old Jawi did not have vowels. For example, the word dal lam in Arabic, in Jawi, equivalent to DL. Now, DL is not dal, it's duli, His Highness. Just like the kapya dal, just a K, Y, D. It's not kida, it's kite. And it's in Suprabha and other names, you know. Offhand, I can't remember unless I refer.
No, I think you've given plenty of examples.
Yeah?
But I am also curious to know what this means for us today. Why is the Sejarah Melayu important to the Malaysian narrative?
It's important. First, for example, we have the titles, right? You have the Tun.
Yes.
You have Tan Sri. You have Datu. You know? To me, this is also a result of misreading. To me, some people will be angry with me. You see, Tun is TWN, the equivalent in Romanized form. TWN actually is Tuan. Te Wau Nun is Tuan. But as I say, there's no vowel, no diphthong. So the word Tun originally should be Tuan. Why do I say Tuan? Tuan is the highest honorific title in Malay culture. From Tuan, you get the word Tuhan. Or from Tuhan, you get Tuan. Vice versa. From the Terengganu stone, Terengganu inscription, you get Tuhan is Tuan. It's not Tun. But of course, once you create the terminology, the word Tun, you just accept it. It's the title, the highest title in the country. Now, Tan Sri. Actually, in the Sejarah Melayu, the one I studied, the Krusensen manuscript, Tenun means TN. TN actually means Tuan. Just like the DL just then.
Right.
But if you take Tan, people misread it, you know, when Tengku Rama is in power, it will sound funny if the person is named Das. He will become Tan Das, meaning toilet. Or Tan Tan Cheng Lok. That also sounds funny. So somebody, some wise guy, put the Sri. So you get Tan Sri. It's created. But it's there. Oh, of course, we use it. We accept it. Now, that's why it's important. The sejarah Melayu is important when you want to study the Malay political culture or the early history, even the early history of Malacca. The sejarah Melayu showed that, you know, Malacca was a plural society also.
Mm.
In fact, based on Chinese sources and Portuguese sources, the officials in the Malacca Sultanate were Chinese, Javanese, Bengali, you know, and Gujarati to take charge of the ports, the commerce with the ports. And then even the person who defended Malacca during a battle near the breach of Malacca against the Portuguese happened to be a Gujarati or a Bengali.
How does the sejarah Melayu indicate these things, the plurality, the multiculturalism?
The author of the sejarah Melayu did not try to avoid or try to hide, except in matters of religion. I believe the original author of the sejarah Melayu was a pious Muslim. And because of that, he tried to cover up the coming of the arrival of Buddhism, Hinduism. He did not wish to name Parameswara, you know, the mighty Lord or the supreme Lord. Instead, he changed the name to Iskandar Zulkarnain, Iskandar Shah. Now, Iskandar Shah, if you were to translate it, they are Persian words. If you were to translate into English directly, it becomes Alexander the Great.
Alexander the Great, that's right.
Shah is great.
Mm.
Now, how did he get inspiration? Now, you see, Alexander the Great or Iskandar Shah is mentioned in one of the chapters of the Quran, one of the surahs, in fact. And in the Quran, the prophet waited for Wahyu, revelation, and he got this revelation that Alexander the Great was a king of the East and the West, Iskandar Zulkarnain. Zulkarnain means the one wearing the helmet with two horns.
Mm.
Now, this bright author of the sejarah Melayu, who was very bright, he picked this name, Iskandar Shah, Alexander the Great, to be the name of the Raja of Singapura, the King of Temasek.
Mm.
And later, the last King of Temasek, then he became first King of Malacca. Now, the sejarah Melayu, the author of the sejarah Melayu, wanted to show the unbroken history of the genealogy of the Malay rulers of Malacca from Palembang.
Mm.
So it all started with Palembang. That's why the name Sang Suprabha is important. You know?
Yep.
Then, Sang Suprabha was also known as Sri Tribhuwana, the Raja, the king that controls the sky, the heaven, the earth, and the ocean.
Mm.
Now, there is a hadith that stated Iskandar Zulkarnain was carried off by an angel to the sky, and he was shown the sea, the earth, and the heaven. Now, don't you think it's funny? Because it so happens, it fits in well with the name Suprabha or Sri Tribhuwana. So the author of the sejarah Melayu was a brilliant man, I said.
Mm.
He picked this name, who happens to be ruler of the sky, the earth, and the ocean, which equals the attribute of Sri Tribhuwana, or Sang Nila Utama. And all these names, in fact, they're just a manifestation of each other's name. They're the same person, actually.
So you mentioned earlier as well that we shouldn't look at the sejarah Melayu as a history book, even though it is a historical account.
It's not even a historical account.
Mm.
It's a literary account, literature.
Right. Mm. So then, to what extent can we trust it?
You cannot trust the sejarah Melayu unless you do further research.
Mm.
That is why I objected, and some people are not happy, over the date of the founding of Malacca, which some people, based on the sejarah Melayu, claim that the date was 1262. See, and I was not the only person who says this is nonsense. Yeah. And I think you cannot rely on the Sejarah Melayu if you want to rewrite the history of Melaka. Mm. But the Sejarah Melayu can have, be a very good assistance because culturally, politically, you can understand, you can imagine the structure, the polity of the Sultanate,
right,
which is continued until today. For example, the basic doctrine in the Sejarah Melayu is never go against your ruler. Jangan durhaka. Mm. Durhaka is from the Sanskrit word drohaka, to be treasonous, to be a traitor. And a very important episode or chapter in the Sejarah Melayu is the crisp battle between Hang Jebat and Hang Tuah.
Right.
I don't call it Hang Tuah. That is also misread by many people of the Sejarah Melayu, mm-hmm, started by the Orientalists. The Tawauha, T-W-H, is not Tuah. The word Tuah didn't exist then. It's Tuha. Mm-hmm. Tuha means leader, skillful leader or supervisor. Now, Hang Tuah challenged Hang Jebat. Jebat means kasturi. It means, you know, the smell from the, what do you call it? Musk.
Mm-hmm.
Kasturi means musk.
Yeah.
It is used to make perfume. Jebat is also musk. So it's the same name. But the author of the Sejarah Melayu used kasturi in the chapter of the battle, of the duel. But the author of the Hikayat Hang Tuah changed the name from kasturi to Jebat.
To Jebat, right.
And these people don't know about this. Mm. I published my work on Hikayat Hang Tuah, and some people are not happy with it. They say there's no such thing as Hang Tuah. They don't know. I did the research. So it's Hang Tuah, it's not Hang Tuah. Mm. Of course, the Melaka people are not happy. I don't blame them, mm-hmm, because they say one of the chief ministers has discovered the grave of Hang Tuah, which is also nonsense in history. No such thing as, not even Hang Tuah or Hang Tuah, there's no grave. That's a fictitious grave. Mm. They also have discovered the grave of Hang Jebat, Hang Kasturi, like all the Hangs, which is also nonsense. This is how people play about with history.
Mm.
They abuse history.
Yeah.
For purposes of commerce and tourism.
Yes, of course. But you mentioned earlier that the reason that we rely on the Sejarah Melayu is because we lack other sources.
Yeah.
However, we do have, you know, sources that go beyond things like the Undang-Undang Melaka or the Undang-Undang Laut Melaka. How do these tie in with Sejarah Melayu?
The Undang-Undang Laut Melaka actually is part of the Melaka Sultanate, but it was drafted later. You know, it was later. And it was also inspired by other Undang-Undangs actually. The Undang-Undang Pahang. Pahang was an earlier state than Melaka, you know. Because before Melaka, Pahang used to send embassy or diplomats to China to pay homage to the Chinese emperor. So was Kelantan. So in other words, the Undang-Undang Melaka should not be looked in isolation from the influence of Pahang and the Terengganu stone, Terengganu inscription.
Do we have other sources to study the Melaka Sultanate, you know, perhaps from other regions, say Portugal, China, Persia, all the different cultures that have come into contact with them?
The most reliable is the Chinese sources. For example, the Ming Shi Lu. The Ming Shi Lu helps a lot because it's like a diary. It's dated when Parameswara visited China, how many people came with him, did he bring his daughter, his wife, and son? And then when did the son go to China to inform the Chinese emperor that his father had died? It's from the Chinese sources that, for me, I gather information mostly about the Sultanate. Mm. More reliable than the Sejarah Melayu. I'm not trying to condemn the Sejarah Melayu. It's a great work of literature, but you cannot rely on it to write history.
So do we look to these other sources enough?
Unfortunately, not many. Mm. There are people who do it, but not many.
Mm. So I would like to go back to this idea of what the Melaka Sultanate represented. Could we call it an empire in that period in time?
It was not an empire, although many people claim empire. It was actually a tributary state of China. Tributary in the sense that it was not colonized by China, but the king sent his wakil, his envoy, to pay tributes to China in the hope of getting protection from China. But it's not just Malacca. At that time, in the 15th century, Pasai did the same thing. Siam did the same thing. So was Pahang, Kelantan, Champa, Vietnam. You know, they all paid homage and also paid tributes to the Chinese emperor. And China was regarded as the dominant power. It didn't colonize, but it established good relations, promoted trade, and that's why the trade in Malacca was boosted because of the presence of Chinese traders, Gujarati traders, Pulikat traders, Arab traders, Persian traders, Luzon, Korean, so many.
So to what extent did the Malacca Sultanate and the Sulalato Salatin sort of become a model that was emulated around the Malay world after the fall of the Malacca Sultanate?
After the fall of Malacca Sultanate, because the areas in island South Asia had to reflect on the past. So the rulers then wanted to emulate the grandeur of Malacca. First of all, how was the sultan dressed? What was the hierarchy like? What do you call the leader of your army or the police, people who keep the peace, or the person who keeps peace in at sea? For example, the word Laksamana. Mm. Even though Laksamana was coined based on the Sanskrit name Lakshmana.
From the Ramayana.
Of the Ramayana. And Lakshmana was the brother of Rama. Rama was the king. Lakshmana was very loyal. He was very loyal to Rama. So when the post of Lakshmana was invented in Malacca, he was supposed to be very loyal also. That's why in the Sejarah Melayu, this is where, again, the Sejarah Melayu teaches us, when Hang Tuah was expelled, he did not rebel. Instead, he became still a very loyal servant. He was exiled by the Bendahara. The Sultan wanted him dead, but the Bendahara saved him, according to the story.
Yeah.
According to the story in the Sejarah Melayu. And he became a symbol of loyalty in Malay polity. Jabat was his symbol of durhaka,
yeah,
treason. And that's very important. This doctrine of durhaka and satya, until today prevails.
Mm.
And it's also a setback for Malay political culture because people are afraid to question their leaders.
Right.
And that's what's happening now. Even though the country goes broke, people are still loyal to the leader.
Well, that brings us actually to the question that I want to wrap up the interview with, which is, why do you believe it's important to continue studying the history of the Malacca Sultanate?
We have to study the history of the Malacca Sultanate because our history must go back to as far as possible. And according to history, Malacca was the glorious sultanate on record. It's proven by Chinese documents, Portuguese documents. It was the attraction of, it was the Venice of Asia, actually. You know, even the Chinese regarded Malacca highly. And the Portuguese too. That's why the Portuguese invaded Malacca. And because of that, you see, our history shouldn't start with just Malacca. But Malacca is important, but shouldn't start with Malacca. We should go back as far as possible to Old Kedah, for example. Now people are doing research on Old Kedah. Although they cannot determine the kind of polity that prevailed then. Then I studied the Terengganu inscription, for example, and that is early 14th century. And I proved that Terengganu was a cultural colony of Java.
Mm.
People are not happy. For example, I went to Majapahit area near Gresik last year. I find they have a kind of rice called nasi kerawu. Now, you remember, in Kelantan, you get nasi kerabu.
Yes.
Because the Javanese consonant wu is replaced by ba. Nasi kerawu, just like wulan becomes bulan.
Mm.
So people don't understand this. The wayang kulit, it did not be from Thailand. It's inherited from Java also. The batik culture, also from Java. I'm not trying to glorify Java, but old Java was the highest kind of culture that prevailed then. There's so many words in the Malay language came from Kawi or old Javanese. Mm. This is what many people who study the Sejarah Melayu, go back to the Sejarah Melayu, don't understand.
Just to wrap things up, when you mentioned earlier also how this idea of derhaka and how deeply entrenched it is in the Malay culture, how can we continue to understand the importance of the Sejarah Melayu, but to engage with it critically?
Yes, it is very important to study the Sejarah Melayu critically and yet to be critical of the Sultanate. See, the downfall of the Sultanate was due to the fact that the system was corrupt. And corruption exists even today in our country. And it's practiced by the elite, even the traditional elite. And some people don't know their power. They abuse their power. Whereas the Sejarah Melayu gave, the author of the Sejarah Melayu gave a very important lesson. Don't abuse your power. Reflect back. Try to remember the past. Learn from the past. So that's why the Sejarah Melayu is important. And it is important to change. For the Malays, it's important to change their ways. They should modernize their perception of history, their perception of feudal culture. They should modernize their attitude towards the doctrine of durhaka. They should not be afraid to be durhaka against a wrongdoing, or abuse of power.
Thank you so much, Prof. You've been listening to History on Repeat, the 8-part mini-series where we think through key subjects, places and themes in Malaysia's past and discuss why they still matter today. Today, I've been speaking with Professor Ahmad Adam, historian and independent scholar. If you've missed any part of this interview or any previous segments, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my, on our BFM app or on Spotify. You've been listening to History on Repeat on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.